Welcome to episode number 340 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to talk a little bit about raising good men. Yeah, that's right. There are 1,000 articles out there about raising good men. Let's talk about how here at FPN do we talk about raising good ones. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent. There is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is November the 17th, 2014. Our topic for today is raising good men. That's right. We're going to talk a little bit today about the article of raising good men. When I did a search, I thought, okay, what are people saying about how you raise good boys to become good men? Here's what I found. There are a metric butt ton of articles. And do you know who they're all written by? What gender do you think wrote them all? They're all written by women. Now, I want you to hear me say, I have a deep and profound respect for females. But there's that part of me that's like, men, where are you at? Why are we not writing about good men? In some cases, I think women may have a better perspective and understanding, in the majority case, I should say, about what good men actually should look like. However, in the mix of that, I think that we have lost some of what there is to being a good man. There has been an emasculation phenomenon. And when we say emasculation, what we mean is just making someone less effective in the role. We don't necessarily mean this in the traditional sense of removing, you know, what is considered male components of gender. We're not necessarily talking about that, but I think we're rendering a lot of our young boys ineffective. Hang on to that. We'll get into that here in just a second. Some quick housekeeping. If you guys want to get notified of the new episodes, jump over to the Family Podcast. Enter your name and your email address on the right-hand side where it says submit, and whenever you click on that, you'll go into our special list of folks that get to stay tuned to what is going on when our new shows come out. Make sure you never miss out on that one episode that could have changed everything this week. Guys, what do you want to talk about? I want to know what you guys want to talk about. If you've got some articles that you guys want to shoot us, first off, I want you to know we love talking about things that you guys talk about. The reason we ask this is that we want to be speaking relevant to the things that are of interest to you. Email me, Trey Gibson at the Family Podcast Network. Shoot me an email, guys, and let me know what it is you want to talk about, a link to an article, or maybe just something going on in your life. Just let me know if you want it to be anonymous and you don't want to say anything about your name or anything, you know, like that. We have no problems with that. But let's talk about what's interesting you guys. Trey Gibson at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. You can always call it in, 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT-0. You can pick up your phone, give us a call at that number, and we would love to get your call and your question onto the air. You can also go to the Contact Us page at thefamilypodcast.com. Podcast. Lots of different options in there, including the option to record directly over your iPad, your iPhone, your tablet, whatever you got, your computer, your PC, as long as you got a microphone connected. And last, if you guys want to become a member of the show, that's right. If you want to help support this show, 30 cents, 3 dimes out of every single one of these episodes. If you feel like you're getting, you know, the ideas, the knowledge, the sharpening of your belief systems, but consider becoming a P-Tacker. That's right. Go to thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. Click on the thing that says become a member. Whenever you do that, you will get directed to a page that will allow you to sign up. You can do it at $5 a month. I'm serious. If you can spare $5 a month, that goes a tremendous flipping way to help make the show continue to go. So consider doing that. All right, guys. All the housekeeping's out of the way. Real quick, I want to talk to you guys just about some upcoming changes. I am about ankle deep now into starting up some new physical changes that you guys are going to see to the Family Podcast Network site. Whenever we initially created this site almost 3.5 years ago, mobile wasn't nearly as big of a deal. iPhones were out, but now everybody and their dog's got an iPhone, and everybody's using it and to surf and to, you know, do that stuff out. So anyway, we're getting ready to redo and recode the face of the Family Podcast Network. So you're going to see some changes coming, and the site's going to look a lot different. But I'm believing that we're going to put it in a place where it's going to be much more modernized and much better for those of you guys who are accessing on your iPhone, your iPads, as well as your PCs, to make that experience much more clear, easy to see, and easier to play the show. So anyway, stay tuned for that. We'll let you know when we're about to debut it and audition it. We're building the site right now. A lot of the site building stuff that I'm doing is much more advanced than I've ever done before. It's taken me a long time, but we're going to get it squared away, so keep your eyes peeled for that. All right. With all of that out of the way today, let's get into our topic for today, which again is going to be raising good men. So we talked a little bit about in the intro segment that we have this mentality of emasculation that's happening in this country. Now, again, a lot of times this is like used to define when a man is like deprived of his male role or his male identity. We're going to talk some about that, but I actually like the definition that's a little more broad here, which means to make a person weaker or less effective. I think this has happened not just to male society. I think women's societies, the women culture, the gender, you know, the gender stereotypes that are out there on both sides have rendered our species less effective. And I think it's time that we get back to what it is that we are. Now, I want to be careful today. I want you guys to hear this disclaimer. This is not going to be some machismo, you know, men need to get back to working in the dirt while women get in the kitchen and make their sandwiches. This is not going to be like that. I reject most modern gender stereotypes that there are out there. I think women should have the freedom to choose. And there's not even a question of this. Women have the freedom to choose whatever the crap they want to do. And if they want to go work outside of home, if they want to work in a steel mill, if they want to work picking cotton, or if they want to work as the CEO of a major company, as long as you have the accolades to that, anybody should be allowed to do whatever it is that they want. And so, and I think women come with the fullest capability to do those things as good as men. If anybody starts running down there and sending me those stupid freaking emails, well, Trey, the woman's body is just built different than men. So they, you know, that's fine. I absolutely agree with that. That in most cases, males have a physical disposition. However, I have watched thin 110-pound women beat the crap out of 215-pound men before. So if you're trying to sell me that we have more naturally large physiques, I won't disagree with you. But the reality is an empowered woman does amazing flipping crap. That's it. I've seen it too many times. Okay? So this is not going to be one of those men need to be the ones outside working on the yard while the lady folk are inside taking care of the house. That is not going to be where this will go today. So when we're talking about raising good men and this emasculation that's happened to our men in this current society, we're not going to go through this mentality that we need to get back to those good old days. What we're talking about is getting our men, our young boys, our teens, our teen boys, back to a place where they are effective, back to a place where they are strengthened from this weakness that we have grown. If you look at our society today, it's amazing how much of this young men and the young women too in our current society are terrified. They are absolutely terrified of risk. They're terrified of college. They're terrified of all these different things. It's like they're terrified of success. And I think a large part of that has come because we have allowed our kids to not understand who they are. We have these kids that don't want to take responsibility for the things that they happen in their life. They get a girl pregnant, and all of a sudden, it's a mistake. And don't get me wrong, a lot of this crap we're talking about here is not new. There's nothing new under the sun with a lot of this. It's been around for years. But we've got these kids, these boys that are growing up saying, I want to be a man. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to do my thing with a woman. And then they get a woman pregnant, and all of a sudden, well, I'm too young for this, right? They want to be men right up until the point that they want to take the responsibility of a man. What happened? Now, I'm giving you guys an extreme version here. You say, well, I mean, Trey, my kid's not like that, or not all kids are like that. I don't disagree. But there's an element to where we've lost a lot of the capacity of understanding for this. I was talking, I think we talked about this in a previous show, but I was talking with a young lady not too long ago, And we were talking about she had just gotten a job, and now mom and dad are making her pay for, you know, a few things, including, like, you know, insurance for the car and fuel and all this other stuff. And I was asking her how she liked her new job. She goes, "Well, Trey, I mean, it'd be great, but at the same time, now I have this job. Now I've got to pay for everything." And we were talking a little bit about how that is true, and how whenever you become an adult, you accept on a lot of extra responsibility that you may not have had before this. But the reality is that you're unlocking a freedom that you didn't have before. When someone gives you money for gas or insurance, they hold a psychological power over us, whether we want them to or not, even if they don't even mean to do that. In our mind, this person just gave me a lot of money through my insurance or gave me a lot of money for gas. I owe them something. And when you go and you earn your own income, that money hits you and there are no strings attached, with the exception you got to show up for your job and you got to do your job right. But there is a set of boundaries, a definition there that makes you a free man. Because at any moment's notice, you can quit that job and go start a new one. And we talked a little bit about that. And this concept was so foreign to this kid. So foreign. And I think that as a society, we have dropped the ball in educating our kids. Now, I'm selecting it out today on the men's side of this. A lot of this stuff you're going to listen to, and you're going to hear how this goes on both sides of the gender. I'm picking raising men today just because I've spent a lot of time with my boys this weekend, with my 6-year-old son, Grant, and my foster to hopefully adopt son, Axel. We've just spent a lot of time this weekend. I was thinking about, and I was watching him interact with some of the other kids today at church today as they were in their Sunday school rooms and stuff like that. And it just got me thinking, man, our little boys are wieners nowadays. I don't mean to be crude. I really don't with that. But they're little wieners, man. They can't take anything. And I just noticed that they were so cryy. My son, hear me say, my son is very sensitive soul. Always have been. It's his best feature, and it's also his biggest detriment in many cases. So he'll go to even at 6 years old, he'll get his feelings very badly hurt, more than most kids I've ever seen that are his age. And sometimes as a dad, that's really frustrating because my thought process is, my God, I can't see anything without him getting, you know, his feelings hurt. However, he's also the very first kid when he hears a baby cry who jumps up and goes over there and gives him a pacifier or picks him up and holds him and rocks him until they quit crying. It's that sensitivity in him that is a wonderful thing. So I don't want you to hear me say, so my son is the super tough, macho, you know, young man. I mean, he's a very sensitive man emotionally. However, I watched him with the other kids. They were out there, the other young boys. And they started doing roughhouse play. Roughhouse play that I did as a kid, roughhouse plays that you see the earlier generations before me doing. And they could not handle it. They were getting hurt. They were getting, ouch, they had this, you pushed me. Now, some of that is normal for certain ages. But we're talking at 6 years old. There's supposed to be some rough and tumble play. And they could not handle it. And it got me thinking, as we, you know, we look at this society. I'm about to say a comment that's a generalized comment. And it is a stereotype, guys. I'm about to stereotype here. I want y'all to hear me say this. It is a stereotype. But to me, it is a piece of the quintessential problem that we're dealing with. And it's this classic hipster male thing. Don't get me wrong. Not all hipsters that are male are wieners. They're not. They're just not. However, there's this mentality that I keep seeing. It's like these almost androgynously dressed men that if it wasn't for a few societal characteristics, I would wonder if they're females. Now, I'm not saying dressing like a quintessential 21st century American man is what makes a person a man. That's not what I'm trying to say. But my wife calls it the wussification of men today. And I think she's right. And really, the reality is we've done that on both genders. We're doing it with females as well. We're just kind of hallmarking the men's side of it today because it's been something that's relevant to me. So the question that came to my mind is, how do we create men that are men without them becoming the overdone generalization the other direction? How do we keep them from becoming chauvinists or anti-feminists? How do we raise men that are good men? How do we raise men that are strong and tough but kind and thoughtful and caring? How do we raise men that take care of themselves but then also look out to meet the needs of the others. And I'm not just talking about physical needs here, guys. A lot of times it's real easy to fixate when we talk about the needs that we talk about we focus on. It's like, so a man's job is to go out and get a job and take care of the physical needs, right? The security, the survival needs that we have as people, as a family, food, shelter, water, clothing, right? Health and sanitation, security, right? We see that as being the job of the man. And that is what I'm talking about. But I'm also talking about teaching men how to see the needs, the emotional needs of others as well. To be able to look at our kids and say, they have not been getting enough of their daddy lately. I've been way too distracted or disconnected or fill in the blank. How do we teach our sons to see the world around them, to see the people around them, to see their own kids one day, to see their own spouse one day, and see the need that they have and then go and freaking meet it? How do we do that? We're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're not going to hit everything. You know, this is a big topic, and the concept of raising any person to where they're kind, thoughtful, caring, really what you need to do is go back to some of the first episodes of the Family Podcast Network and start listening to really get the full graduated master's level understanding all this. You got to start this stuff over. So, but let's talk about some key crucial points today. One of the things that, and so kind of going through my list in my head here, one of the first things we need to do is almost going to seem contradictory to what we think about when we say men. But number one, we need to teach our kids how to handle their emotions. Now, as I read all the little mommy blogs and the Woman's Day this and the whatever, you know, that was reading all this stuff, this was like one of the number ones, and it was like, teach them how to handle their emotions. I have to assume is because when we think about bad men, right, men that turn out not being good people, they're not kind, thoughtful, caring, etc., and they don't focus on the objectives of others, one of the things that we often see is abusive relationships, and I agree. That is something that absolutely needs to be avoided. Where do I have a problem with this one? Teaching kids to manage their emotions. Whenever we teach our kids to be overly sensitive, right? When we teach them to not be able to rein in emotions, there is an extreme that we're talking to with this. But I think that's one of the first places we have to go, because I think it's one of the most neglected areas in raising boys that we have. We almost often teach them to be physical and roughhouse and play, but we don't teach them how to be strong mentally and emotionally. So we need to teach our kids that the big boys don't cry mentality is not necessarily the case. The reality being, crying is, I mean, look at it how you want to look at it. Whether you're a creationist and believe that God made us this way, or an evolutionist and believe that we've evolved and the best way to sustain our species and keep us alive, crying is a beautiful, beautiful thing that human beings do. See, what happens is when we begin to experience emotional distress, right? Now, mind you, distress is whenever the effects of stress in our life become so much that they begin to affect us physiologically. When we experience distress as humans, we begin releasing chemicals called cortisol. Cortisol is the stress hormone. We lose our ability to be able to handle our memory. Our memory starts to slip, etc. Cortisol is not a bad thing, but when you constantly stay stressed out, it's not a good thing. But can you guess what action that we do as humans that helps balance out the cortisol? It releases pleasure and endorphin chemicals back into the brain to help bring us out of our stress. Guess what does that? Crying does. It is a beautiful evolutionary display, or a beautiful thing that God built into us. Whatever it is that you believe, it is a beautiful thing that takes our stress and helps reduce it. Whether the situation has changed or not, crying feels good. Did you know that crying actually stimulates the same part of the brain, the same pleasure parts of the brain that marijuana does? Boom! What I'm telling you is, the next time that you get upset, go cry yourself a doobie. Okay, maybe I'm being a little facetious in this, but the reality is that crying feels good. To deny ourselves our ability to have a quote-unquote good cry is asinine. It's ridiculous. Now, why is it that we do that? Why is it that we run to this? In most all cases, whenever you want to inappropriately defend a point, one of the favorite things that people love to do, you look on Facebook and you'll see this. And what we talk about is the dichotomy of extreme fallacies here. And what that is that, or the people also call it the straw man fallacy. And what you'll see that people will do is, whenever they need to defeat you in a battle, like in an argument, what they will do is they will exemplify what you believe, right? So let's just say that, like, okay, here's a good example. I don't believe in taking away the right to for a woman to say what she's going to do with her body, e.g. an abortion. I don't believe in taking that right away from you. However, in the Homestead de Gibson, we believe that it is completely wrong. We believe that conception begins that life begins at conception. And so for us, if we were to ever kill a baby in utero, it would be flat out wrong, because for us, under a constitutional mindset mixed with our religious beliefs, that baby is a life the instant that it is conceived. And as such, it is entitled to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And so the rights of us as a family, or the rights of my wife as a person, become forfeited because in our mind, that baby has life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness in their model, in their favor now. We can't do it. However, I don't think that the U.S. government should ever come in and say, no, woman, you can't do that to your body. I don't think that is right. Even if it's not the right choice for us, I don't think it should be legislated. So when I argue this with people that are pro-life, right, when I argue this with them, they agree with me. However, when I argue this with them, I say, well, no, I don't think we should use legislation to make this stop. Then they will say, oh, so then you think that it's okay for people to go and kill babies. No, I sure don't. To the point that I can guarantee you that my definition, no, I can't guarantee you, I can almost guarantee you that my definition of what life is more strict than theirs. These are pro-lifers. My definition of what life is, because most of them will say, you know, most of them will say that they use pill-based contraceptives. We don't. We don't use pill-based contraceptives. Well, why, Trey? Because the natural circumstance that can happen when you use pill-based is that you slough a fertilized egg. Sperm, egg, meat, boom. Then what will happen is that it can actually embed and implant into the uterine wall. And whenever it plants into the uterine wall, the chemical hormone will get released from the pill that you take, the pill form of contraception that you take. And it will go ahead and slough the uterine wall with an already implanted and fertilized egg in the uterine wall. So for us, we believe that life begins at conception. Sperm flies down, egg does its thing, it's in there. Now we're talking, alleles are splitting, and you have cell division. To us, that is where life has begun, when cells start to divide. Trey, why are you going through all this stuff? I need people to understand here the level that I take our belief systems, even though we don't feel that we should ever have it legislated. So what people will do is that argue, then, oh, well, y'all must be pro-choicers. Well, no. We're anti, you know, we are anti-litigation type people. We are anti-legislation. We don't think that the U.S., the state, has any right being in our lives as people, telling us what we can and can't do. The only purpose of the United States government and legislation is to protect my ability to choose. But people need to argue that way out there to prove a point. And so what they do is they make me into something that I'm not, because it's really easy for a pro-lifer to destroy a pro-choicer, especially if you're Christian. It's easy. So they set me up as a straw man, right? As a scarecrow. They make me into a scarecrow argument. And then they come out and they chop my scarecrow, the defenseless scarecrow, down, and then strut around like, look at me and my bad self. I just beat Trey in this argument. No, you didn't. That's not my argument at all. So going back to this crying thing, what do people use to defend their perspective to give up one of the most amazing physiological responses to sadness and depression and fear that we have? Why is it that we will go and we will say that big boys don't cry? Why do we do that? It's because what we do is we say that if you teach your kids that they are in a perspective or in a place where they're crying, then they're going to be crybabies, right? So what do? They straw man it. They create a false argument about what it is to try to make it. Well, nobody wants a crybaby. I'm an emotional guy. I am. I've got a son and his emotional kid. I don't want a crybaby. I don't want to be a crybaby. So you see what's happening here is that people use this fear-based mentality of emotionally competent children, and they try to turn it into being something that it's not about. That they're going to become crybabies. They're going to cry all the time. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie Bedazzled. I think it was Bedazzled. Yeah, Bedazzled. And anyway, it has Elizabeth Hurley and the dude, I can't remember. It's one of my wife's favorite actors, the guy from The Mummy. Anyway, great part in there where he has to be more emotional. And of course, you know, he's making these deals with the devil, basically. And every time that he asks for, you know, this deal that he makes with the devil, it becomes this horrible disaster. And one of them was that, you know, he has to be more emotional. And then he tries to go get with this chick now that he's more emotional. And he's like, he can't stop crying about how beautiful the sunset is. And she's trying to put the moves on him. And he's all of a sudden overwhelmed by the beauty of a dead jellyfish or something. You know what I mean? And I think that's the mentality we get when we think about this concept of making emotionally competent kids, that we see that in our mind and we shut down. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is kids that acknowledge, I am afraid, I am scared, I am angry, I feel jealous about. Well, how do you do that? How do you get your kid to be more emotionally competent? Number one, get them talking to you. Get your kid talking. And when I mean talking, I mean shut the crap up as a parent. Get your kid talking. Hey, what happened, bud? I noticed you looked really upset when I picked you up from Sunday school today. Well, this happened. Oh, really? 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 Tell me more about that. Guys, remember that phrase. Tell me more. Tell me more. That's a great phrase to use right there because you're not leading questions. So they say something, they stop. Okay, tell me more. Well, I don't want to. Well, you mentioned that this happened and that happened there. Tell me more about that. Prompting kids to keep talking is a great thing. Number two, I recommend that you help your kids identify what they're feeling. A lot of times kids will come up and say, I'm angry. I'm angry that this happened. And I said, oh, really? Okay, tell me about that. And then they might explain that so-and-so had a new toy, and they got really upset that they didn't have one, too, and that other person was flaunting, yeah, I have one of these, and you don't. Well, it's easy to say I'm angry, but when you really listen to what they're saying, sometimes you'll hear that they're using anger to cover up, again, jealousy, right? And you feel jealous that somebody else has something that they don't have. And so helping kids name emotions is so good. You know, you said that you feel angry, and I think you are very angry too, but you know what else I'm hearing in there is it sounds like you're feeling kind of jealous. Jealous just means that you really want something that somebody else has, and you're upset that you don't have it. So helping kids name emotions is good. And then last, I recommend when it comes to emotional competence, teach kids how to find solutions. It's one thing to tell a kid that, yeah, you're upset, angry, sad, mad, glad, whatever. But teaching kids to find solutions is so good because sometimes if we leave our kids to their own devices to find their own ways to come up with solutions, it turns out very poorly. But helping them think. So what do you think you could do? I'm just going to take his toy next time I see him. All right, yeah. What do you think would happen if you just take, you know, this pretty neat toy from this kid next week? Well, I'm going to get in trouble. Is that what you want? Are you wanting to get in trouble? No. Okay, do you want to stick with that plan or do you want to come up with something else? Hopefully the answer will be, I want to come up with something else. But helping kids find solutions is good. Another thing that I recommend for raising good men, and again, like I said, almost all of these go back and forth with the female gender as well, but I recommend that you have your kids learn empathy. Mind you, that empathy is just an ability to be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, to imagine what they feel like, what a person's thinking. And frankly, it's just something we don't teach men to do very often. But taking that ability to ask myself, what do we think this person is feeling? What are they going through? Is absolutely valuable. We want boys to grow up and be leaders. The best leaders are the best leaders that I've ever met were those leaders that were out there that were looking out for the things that their employees needed. And their objectives, right? So we talk about that all the time. It's focusing on the objectives of others. That is what a good leader does. That's what a good leader does to take care of people. Is they look to see, okay, this is what they're needing. This is what they're needing to be successful. Let's get them there. So how do we teach our kids to do that as well? We have to teach them to be empathetic. Sorry, guys, man. I'm having a hard time today with some words. We have to teach them to be empathic. We have to teach them that ability, as a good leader does, to stop and look around them and say, here's what my son is needing from me right now. Here's what I have not been giving enough of my daughter. Here's what I've been doing way too much, and I should quit doing that as much to this kid, right? That ability to put ourselves in other people's shoes is so valuable. How do we teach empathy to kids? Get down and be empathic with them. You know, I think a lot of times parents like to use their age and their length of time on earth and their experiences as kind of ways to defeat kids and what they go through. So, for example, you know, a kid comes home and they're upset because they lost their Transformers toy or something like that. We have a tendency to look at situations like that and say, oh, how petty is that, right? Because we're having a hard time maybe paying the bills, or Aunt So-and-so's dying, or whatever else. We're trying to decide if we're going to put mom and dad in a nursing home. I mean, we have these questions like this rolling through our heads sometimes. And a lot of times we dismiss what our kids go through. But I want you to start conceptualizing it like this. You may be trying to decide if you're going to cremate or bury your mom or dad. And that is a tough question. But it may seem difficult when a kid is freaking out because they don't know where their transformer toy is. It may seem petty to us, but the reality is, to them, that can be a huge deal. To them, it can be absolutely life-changing because they don't have the life experiences and the time and the energy and the exercise that we have as adults in practicing this stuff. So being able to be empathic with our kids is so valuable because eventually they will take that with them. Number three, I encourage you to build your son up. Build your son up. You know, there's an old saying that we heard years ago. And it actually went through, you know, even when I was a young man in junior high and high school. But we always talked about if a person is ever berating other people, more often than not, it's not that they're really trying to tear other people down, even if that is the consequence of it. What it's really about is they're trying to build, put themselves on a level that they feel they can compete with. So worded differently, when a person is constantly trying to falsely build themselves up or are constantly trying to bring other people down, and more often than not, it's that they feel like crap about themselves and they're just trying to get themselves at a normal level. Now, rather than build themselves up, which is admittedly harder in most cases, it's a lot easier to tear other people down, right? Kind of gravity on your hand metaphorically here. But building up how a kid feels is so good. I want to make sure I'm very clear here. When we say building our kids up, I'm not talking about giving fake BS praise to your kid. Your kid needs to hear you praise them. However, if your kid goes out for soccer and they go play soccer and they're not all that good, telling them that they were great or they were a great soccer player is probably not the best thing to do. Be honest with your kids. Don't be mean. Don't be a jerk. Find those good things in them. But skip the false praise. It's so, so, so valuable. The next one on my how to raise good men list is, and this is kind of tantamount for each one of these that we've talked about, but I wanted to split it into its own category. Teach your kids to see people as people. One of the articles when I read this talked about, you know, getting to the point where you teach your kids to respect others. I do agree with that. However, I think it's possible to respect someone and yet at the same time be in the box towards them. And so that's not what I'm talking about. And when we say box, we're talking about in that place where we see people as an object to us. They're a stumbling block, or they're a problem to us, right? That's not a good place. So I recommend that you teach your kids to see everyone as people. Everybody. Red and yellow, black and white. We're talking about all across the spectrum, all across the genders, all across the religious beliefs. Now, wait a minute, Trey. Did you just tell me that I need to have my kid respect ISIS? No, not on a religious level. Let me rephrase that. From what I am garnishing from mainstream media, which I hate and don't trust, they look like they're pretty big douche nozzles, and I get that. But life is valuable, and life is precious. Even people like that. See, a lot of people, especially Christians, will argue that, Trey, they don't need to have their life spared. There are horrible people. They're beheading and killing and all that other stuff. And I'll ask him, listen, do you like the Bible? Well, yeah. You like the New Testament? Yeah. Do you realize that a majority of the New Testament was written by a guy who did exactly what ISIS is doing to Christians? That was Saul before he became Paul. One of the main writers of the epistles. But the major writer of the books of the New Testament. Paul wrote the majority of them. And yet he went around beheading people and killing them and stoning them. What if they just killed him off? You would not have a majority of your New Testament. I am not saying if an ISIS member walked onto my property and started making threats and started doing anything that was aggressive towards me or my family, I will dispatch you to the place of your 72 virgins in a heartbeat. Don't hear me say that I'm a pacifist. I'm not a pacifist. But what I'm saying is that I value life, and I acknowledge that life is what it is, and that some lives that started out rotten, e.g. Saul, turned around and became some of the most influential people for good. So I'm not saying, again, that it's about pacification. What I am saying it is about is that I have to look at life as important. All life. Respecting others. I even say it's about respecting things like animals. Respecting our dogs and what they do, the place that they provide in our family. The chickens and the ducks that we have in the back. And the system that they provide between their duck poop for fertilization, their eggs for a food source. And even just their pest control for eating bugs. Having a high level of respect for them. I'm even talking, guys, I'm a deer hunter. I love to hunt deer. But I have a respect for the animals that I hunt. For what they provide and for their lives. I know that sounds weird. I get it. Even as I'm saying, like, it sounds weird. But I just do. Teaching kids to have that respect for life. To see people as people. To see things as things. And to respect that is so valuable. And men need to re-engender that. Now, when we say respect, am I talking about obedience to people? I am sure not. It is possible to still respect people and not do exactly what they say. It's possible to see people as people and to see them as valuable and to see them as counting as much as I do, even as I say, but I'm not going to do what you ask here. Remember, respect is not about obedience. Respect is about seeing a person for what they are, and that is another fellow person. Next off, I actually recommend that you teach your kids to be affectionate, your boys to be affectionate. I'm not talking about, you know, teaching them to be oochie, smoochie, gucci all the time. Of course, I don't teach my girls to be that either. But I'm talking about teaching them that it's okay to love and hug and care. Why do we teach them to do that? Number one, it might be important to them. If it's one of their love languages as a kid, that's valuable for them, and they probably need to see and hear that. They need to be receiving that from you. But number two, even if they're not, they may have a spouse one day that is a high affection person. Physical affection is what Gary Chapman calls that in the five love languages. They may have a spouse that is that way. So showing and teaching to show affection is valuable. Also, if you look at brain neurological studies in kids and in children's development in the brain, when kids get hugged, they actually form more synapses and have tighter connections. Hugging and affection with our kids actually helps make their brain stronger. It's also been shown that kids that do not receive that, like I actually did work with a kid a few years ago who got pulled by CPS, and this mom would literally take this, we're talking a one and a half, two-year-old child, would put him in a crib, would put some food in there, and then would be gone from 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 when she left. She'd be gone from 7:30 in the morning, would not even return until 7:30, and that baby stayed in that crib. Didn't get touched, didn't get held, didn't get picked up, didn't get cuddled. What they found was they had 25% less gray matter than babies the same age that get held, coddled, and all that other stuff. It's interesting. They even have mission trips that'll go to places like these Russian orphanages that are solely designed to where they just go and rock babies to help them grow in that neurological development. So showing affection is more than just getting a googly googly little boy. It's about actually helping their brains grow. It's about teaching them the value of doing this and even being able to watch who are the people around me that need more physical affection. We are often socialized as men to not be affectionate beings, right? I disagree with that. Why do I disagree with that? Well, it's the physical evidence, as evidenced by the fact that kids that get loved on and held, cuddled, and hugged, and hold hands, and all that other good jazz, people that have that happen actually have better neurological patterns. All right, next on Trey's list of what boys need, and guys, I want you to hear me say, this is another one that may sound like it's a proprietary boy issue. No, not for me. I think this should go on boys' and girls' sides both. I think every man should know how to defend himself. As young as they are capable of learning, I think boys should be taught how to fight. Now, I'm not talking about going and picking fights. I'm especially not teaching them to go out and be bullies. That's why you begin, before you even touch self-defense, you begin with teaching kids to be kind, thoughtful, loving, appreciative, those kinds of things. That's why we teach those first. You start with that as the foundation. Then when you build self-defense, they've already been ingrained with the mentality of being kind, thoughtful, gentle. And when you begin applying these ideas of being aggressive, they begin to understand that this what I'm learning does not connect with the people that I love and that I care about. This does not connect with the people that are close to me and look to me to treat them right. It is, however, for people who choose to encroach on me in any one of those areas, life, liberty, or property, right? When a person encroaches on one of those, I am authorized to use violent force to stop what people are doing to me, to other people, whoever, my family, or their family to be. And teaching kids this is so valuable because it creates a confidence level in kids. I see it take away fear that I normally see in a lot of other kids. When my kids go to new classes, they're not really all that worried about it because I think deep down inside their mind, nestled behind training and kicks and punches and all of the stuff, they know if somebody tried to be mean to me, I could make them stop. Or at least hurt them really badly until they didn't have an option. I think every kid should be taught self-defense. Now, I'm going to real quickly stack this one in here. I think that every boy, but I also think every girl, should also have firearms training. This one's a personal one, guys. If you don't like firearms, that's fine. Don't send me your pissy emails because I'm not going to spend any much time on them. But I think every kid should understand how to handle a firearm and to shoot. And outside of the fact that it can be great bonding time for people, my son has been begging me to go. So he went out and shot pistols with me the other day, and he hit that bullseye for that first time. And, man, the hooks were set in that young man because now he is ready to go shooting. But I think learning how to handle a firearm is so valuable. Just the confidence that I see self-defense and firearm manipulation that it builds in my kids is so valuable and so good. So teaching kids to do this creates a confidence level. It creates the knowledge that I am not a defenseless being. I know how to use my fists. I know how to use a firearm to defend. It is a powerful, powerful thing when it is coupled with the notion of life, liberty, and property that we cannot encroach. That's where we get. This is also the same thing. We would substitute the word bully here. When we cannot encroach on other people and their freedom to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Kind of in the same venue here, another one of Trey's what should we teach here is I think that we should teach a kid how to take a hit. Now, that's kind of a self-defense terminology there, but that concept is based off of one of the larger parts of a fight. When you get into a fight, like a fight to the life where you're trying to defend yourself, one of the important pieces of it is the ability to be able to take hits. When somebody comes swinging at you, you're going to take hits one way or the other. And so learning how to take a hit is valuable. Now, I'm saying this in a metaphoric sense. I mean it in a literal one. The ability to be able to take a hit and not have to cry about it is valuable. But learning how when life throws curveballs, or maybe it throws a right jab cross mix that we didn't see coming or whatever else, maybe we got an uppercut to the bottom of the chin in life, being able to take a hit is valuable. Being able to acknowledge that I just got hit with something that is painful. And maybe scary or disorienting, sticking with the metaphor here. But being able to handle that is valuable. Being able to deal with tough stuff, it's kind of that problem solving that we talked briefly on before. But that's the ability to problem solve through stress. And some of the most influential people out there that I've ever met or that I know or that I've read about were people that had an uncanny ability to focus under pressure and under pain. And they could cut through the fog of those you know, that stimulus, whether it was pain or fear or whatever else, and continue to focus. So taking a hit is valuable. That ability to handle getting fired. This is kind of the anti-teacup movement, as we might say, a teacup kids movement. That like, for instance, those of you guys who listen to Jack's show that he continues to use. You know, this is the anti-teacup generation mentality. And teaching kids how to take a hit and how to think, okay, I just lost my job. Now what? Well, here's the answer. Or the solution to this kind of stuff is, a way to take a hit is just a deflect a blow here. Again, going metaphoric, you know, we find out that we've lost our job. Man, I have no idea what to do. But I do remember that my dad lost his job when he was in college. Let's call him and see what he would do. Right. So that's what we're talking about here when we say take a hit. Well, alright, guys, I have a few more of these that I was going to throw out there. We're at 45 minutes here, and I don't want to push the show any further. So we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Don't forget to come join us again this Wednesday. We're going to chunk out another episode. That's right. We're actually going to have special guest Judy McMee to come on and talk a little bit about ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and college. What do we do if we've got a kid who is high energy and high distractibility who wants to go to college, is there a way to get through that? There sure is. Judy's going to come on and talk to us about that. Guys, you're going to want to hang tight with us. We have some amazing interviews that are lined up over the next 5 weeks. I think we have about four interviews. You're going to want to come check these out. We're going to be covering things from the ADHD. We're going to be going over sleep studies and how to help our kids sleep. We're going to have a lady who comes on who's going to talk about world schooling. I'm so excited to have Lainey come on and talk about that, and as well as how do we handle, you know, working with our kids to teach them about the real Christmas spirit. We're going to have some great interviews coming up. Make sure you stay tuned for those. You guys have a great day and a great week. We'll see you all on Wednesday.